his heel and walked around the bottom of the armorer's bed, stepping in close to her. He leaned down so that his face was on a level with hers. She recoiled at his cold anger, nearly dropping her jar of leeches.
Oh, don't hit me, Master!
I won't.
Send her away, Ryan. It's only a knock on the skull. I'll soon be better.
I can help, but it has to be my way.
Or
not at all.
So it's not at all. JB's recovery from the murderous blow to his head took longer than either he or Ryan had guessed. The concussion lingered for 3 more days, with blurring of his vision and voracious, sickly pains across the side of his skull that made him throw up a dozen times. It was an additional 2 days before they both felt that the armorer was fit enough to face the rigors of long hours on the road inside the LAB-25. During that time, the morning Ville seemed to be frozen in a vacuum around them, like a fly trapped helplessly in a block of cooling amber. The death of a baron can often result in a period of limbo before his successor appears. But there was no clear claimant in the Ville. The heirs were dead, tipped together into an unmarked grave in the depths of the forest of pines to the east of the Ville. No tears were shed for them. The funeral of Baron Hamish Tenbos was a splendid affair. A cortege wound through the Ville, following the coffin on the back of a flatbed truck. Men, women, and children, many of them weeping, all in their best dark clothing, trudged through the sleet that fell that afternoon. Most of them cast curious sideways stares at the tall, one-eyed outlander who strode among the Sekhmen. It had been a deputation of the senior Sekhmen who had come to visit Ryan and JB in their bedroom the evening before the interment of their last master. 5 of them stood uncomfortably around the walls, their guns holstered, none of them wanting to be the one who started to speak to the dangerous outlanders. In the end, it was the oldest of them, his long gray hair streaked with white, who put the suggestion.
We don't want some wolf's head strangers coming in and snatching power, mongrels that hear of a house empty and come crawling in to try and fill it themselves. Not that.
Ryan and JB were silent for 50 beats of the heart, glancing at each other.
We're flattered, aren't we, JB? We've both been around Deathlands all of our lives, and there have been times we've had some good offers. But I don't think we've ever been offered everything. Not to be the barons of what seems to be a thriving, contented Ville. It takes your breath away a little. But, that isn't the way.
Ryan's right. We're strangers passing through, and that's what we'll be doing in a day or so.
Nothing magical about being a baron. Just be strong and be fair. The only 2 rules that really signify. Why not you?
Me?
Why not, Jethro? Compared to those dead bastards, you're a real prince. We'll back you. And I can't think of a living soul in the whole Ville and lands around who'd stand against you.
Ryan could see that this was far too cataclysmic an idea for them all to get their brains around. When the 5 left the bedroom, it was obvious that a great deal of talking still needed to be done. But with fundamental decency on all sides and a fair share of goodwill, there was no real reason to think that the idea might not work. Finally, with the throne still vacant, it came time for JB, almost fully recovered, and Ryan, to be on their way northward once more. They left early in the morning, having made their farewells the previous evening. It was much colder, with a dusting of snow over the armistice of the wag, the exhaust belching blue-gray smoke into the dawn. Ryan drove, steering them north toward Oregon, and then on to the ghost-haunted ruins of Seattle and Trader.
Go on ahead, my swift-footed Mercury. Leave this laggard cripple to follow at his own poor pace.
Doc was doubled over, his hands on his knees, fighting for breath. A worm of white spittle dangled from his open mouth, swinging in the watery moonlight. Dean danced from foot to foot, burning in his eagerness to return to the safety of the farmhouse, and warn Christy of the lethal treachery on the part of the Apostle Simon and his slaves of sin.
We're almost there, Doc!
And I am almost done, dear boy. Please, go on, and I'll be there as fast as I can.
Sure you'll be okay, Doc?
Doc patted the butt of the Lamar.
Of course. I have my equalizer here. It will support me against those evildoers that trouble me.
Dean squatted on his heels, his face sheened with sweat.
Doc, are Jack and Mildred...
Of course, they'll be all right. Now, go ahead and warn Christy. Tell her I'll be there in 2 shakes of a gnat's tail.
The boy vanished, his dark clothing quickly merging into the desert. Doc straightened, waiting for the tightness of the steel band around his temples to loosen its grip, trying to slow his breathing and pulse, the way Christy had sought to teach him. But worry over Mildred and Jack swamped his mind, and he found himself on the brink of tears. He folded his gnarled hands together and peered for a moment into the star-spangled firmament above him.
Listen a moment to a silly old fool, Lord. I know that I've been things I don't take pride in, and I don't recall the last time I asked for help. But if you can aid me and the woman and the boy against those... They take your name in vain and abuse the ideas you stand for, Lord. Anyway, just do what you can, and lend a lick to what's right, Lord. Amen.
Christy was standing on the porch, staring out into the blackness, when she spotted the small figure of Ryan's son, panting his way toward her.
I know.
What? How?
Dean wanted to lie down and recover from the cross-country dash, but he wouldn't let himself show any weakness in front of Christy.
I felt it. Where's Doc?
Following. He couldn't keep up.
Well, he is around 200 years older than you, Dean. Come in and sit down and have a drink of buttermilk, and tell me what happened.
Doc arrived less than 10 minutes later, having fallen a couple of times as he picked his way through the arroyo. Part of him simply wanted the security of the front door of the house being slammed and bolted behind him. Another part of him kept hearing steps following him, and his back twitched at the expectation of a steel blade plunging into his spine. He collapsed in an armchair, legs spread in front of him, wondering how long the pains in his knees were going to persist.
Dean has told you all?
Yes, they have a rifle and 2 hand blasters now. We have more weapons.
Dean was at the table, his upper lip bearing a pale cream mustache from a gulped glass of buttermilk.
They'll kill them both, then come for us.
Probably.
Christy ran her strong fingers through the curling mane of fiery hair, feeling its sentient length respond to her touch, like 1,000 incandescent feathers.
Should we turn off all of the oil lamps? We don't know how long it might be before they decide to pay us a visit.
Christy waved to Dean to turn the wicks down, plunging the house into darkness.
Right. Now we have to do some serious planning.
Christy realized in the next half hour just how much she had always relied on Ryan when it came to the dealing of death. She was aware that the slaves of sin might take it into their crazed skulls to come after them before dawn. So the three of them sat out on the porch with their blasters drawn, talking through a variety of schemes to rescue Mildred and Jack. But none of their ideas seemed to hold together.
They might have killed them by now, and us just talking.
You have to talk before you act. You've heard your father quote traitor often enough.
My belief is that they won't have harmed them, not yet.
How do you figure that? You saw what that triple sicko did to one of his own people.
Right. That is precisely the point that I am laboring to make, young man. Having had their fill of religious torture and murder for the night, I would believe that they won't want to waste 2 fresh victims too quickly.
You could be right. Ryan always said that it was better to be active rather than passive. Go at your enemy before he goes at you.
Attempt to get your retaliation in first. Admirable in many ways. I'm sure that Marshal Ney would have approved. As would Nathan Bedford Forrest. The firstest with the mostest.
But they outnumber us 4 to 1. The one strength we have is this building.
We can only watch 3 sides out of the 4. They can still sneak up on us.
I know. Gaia, if we go out against them, we might lose. But if we stay here, we might lose.
Let me go scout. I could be there and back in no time and report what's happening.
Christy didn't answer for a long moment, rocking gently back and forth.
No, Dean. That man Simon might be as crazy as a roasted scorpion, but he's not totally stupid. He'll look at it like this. They have 2 out of the 5 of us safe in the bag. We know about it pretty quickly when Mildred and Jack don't return. What do we do? Either we go in like the cavalry...